LA Theatre Works presents Copenhagen by Michael Frayn, directed by Martin Jarvis, starring Alfred Molina, David Krumholtz, and Shannon Cochran. This play is part of LA Theatre Works' Relativity series, featuring science-themed plays. Major funding for the Relativity series is provided by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. In 1941, with the Second World War in full swing, German physicist Werner Heisenberg paid a visit to his mentor, Niels Bohr, in Copenhagen. The details of their encounter remain shrouded in mystery. Michael Frayn's Tony Award-winning play imagines the possibilities of their historic visit, as the two men are joined in their reminiscences by Bohr's wife, confidant, and sounding board, Margrethe. And now, Copenhagen by Michael Frayn, produced by LA Theatre Works.
You're still thinking about
it? Why did he come to Copenhagen?
Does it matter, my love, now that we're all three of us dead and gone?
Some questions remain long after their owners have died, lingering like ghosts, looking for the answers they never found in life.
Some questions have no answers to find.
Why did he come? What was he trying to tell you?
He did explain later.
He explained over and over again. Each time he explained, it became more obscure.
It was probably very simple. When you come right down to it, he wanted to have a talk.
A talk? To the enemy? In the middle of a war?
Margrethe, my love, we were scarcely the enemy.
It was 1941.
Heisenberg was one of our oldest friends.
Heisenberg was German. We were Danes. We were under German occupation.
It put us in a difficult position, certainly.
I've never seen you as angry with anyone as you were with Heisenberg that night.
Not to disagree, but I believe I remained remarkably calm.
I know when you're angry.
It was as difficult for him as it was for us.
So why did he do it? Now that no one can be hurt. Now that no one can be betrayed.
I doubt if he ever really knew himself.
And he wasn't a friend. Not after that visit. That was the end of the famous friendship between Niels Bohr and Werner Heisenberg.
Now that we're all dead and gone, yes. And there are only two things the world remembers about me. One is the uncertainty principle. And the other is my mysterious visit to Niels Bohr in Copenhagen in 1941. Everyone understands uncertainty, or thinks he does. No one understands my trip to Copenhagen. Time and time again, I've explained it. To Bohr himself and to Margrethe. To interrogators and intelligence officers, to journalists and historians. The more I've explained, the deeper the uncertainty has become. Well, I shall be happy to make one more attempt, now that we're all dead and gone. Now that no one can be hurt. Now that no one can be betrayed.
I never entirely liked him, you know. Perhaps I can say that to you now.
Yes, you did. When he was first here in the 20s, of course you did. On the beach at Tisvila with us and the boys, he was one of the family.
Something alien about him, even then.
So quick and eager.
Too quick, too eager.
Those bright, watchful eyes.
Too bright, too watchful.
Well, he was a very great physicist. I never changed my mind about that.
They were all good, all the people who came to Copenhagen to work with you. You had most of the great pioneers in atomic theory here at one time or another.
And the more I look back on it, the more I think Heisenberg was the greatest of them all.
So what was Bohr? He was the first of us all. The father of us all. Modern atomic physics began when Bohr realized that quantum theory applied to matter as well as to energy. 1913. Everything we did was based on that great insight of his.
When you think that he first came here as my assistant in 1924.
I'd only just finished my doctorate, and Bohr was the most famous atomic physicist in the world.
And in just over a year, he'd invented quantum mechanics.
It came out of his work with you, Niels.
Within three, he'd got uncertainty.
And you'd done complementarity.
We argued them out both together.
We did most of our best work together.
Heisenberg usually led the way.
Bohr made sense of it all.
We operated like a business.
Chairman and managing director.
Father and son.
A family business.
Even though we had sons of our own.
And we went on working together long after he ceased to be my assistant.
Long after I'd left Copenhagen in 1927 and gone back to Germany. Long after I had a chair and a family of my own.
Then the Nazis came to power.
And it got more and more difficult when the war broke out. Impossible. Until that day in 1941.
When it finished forever.
Yes. Why did he do it?
September 1941. For years I had it down in my memory as October.
September. The end of September.
A curious sort of diary memory is.
You open the pages and all the neat headings and tidy jottings dissolve around you.
You step through the pages into the months and the days themselves.
The past becomes the present inside your head.
September 1941. Copenhagen. And at once, here I am, getting off the night train from Berlin with my colleague, Carl von Weizsäcker, two plain civilian suits and raincoats among all the field gray Wehrmacht uniforms arriving with us, all the naval gold braid, all the well-tailored black of the SS. In my bag, I have the text of the lecture I'm giving. In my head is another communication that has to be delivered. The lecture is on astrophysics. The text inside my head is a more difficult one.
We obviously can't go to the lecture.
Not if he's giving it at the German Cultural Institute. It's a Nazi propaganda organization.
He must know what we feel about that.
Weizsäcker has been my John the Baptist and written to warn Bohr of my arrival.
He wants to see you?
Yeah, I assume that's why he's come.
But how can the actual meeting with Bohr be arranged?
He must have something remarkably important to say.
It has to seem natural. It has to be private.
You're not really thinking of inviting him to the house.
That's obviously what he's hoping.
Niels, they've occupied our country.
He is not they.
He's one of them.
First of all, there's an official visit to Bohr's workplace, the Institute for Theoretical Physics, with an awkward lunch in the old familiar canteen. No chance to talk to Bohr, of course. Is he even present? Huh. It's like being in a dream. You can never quite focus the precise details of the scene around you. At the end of the table, oh, is that Bohr? I turn to look, and it's Bohr. A difficult occasion, though. I remember that clearly enough.
It was a disaster. He made a very bad impression. Occupation of Denmark, unfortunate. Occupation of Poland, however, perfectly acceptable. Germany now certain to win the war.
Our tanks are almost at Moscow. What can stop us? Well, one thing, perhaps. One thing.
He knows he's being watched, of course. One must remember that. He has to be careful about what he says.
Or he won't be allowed to travel abroad again.
My love, the Gestapo planted microphones in his house. He told Gutschmidt when he was in America. The SS brought him in for interrogation in the basement at the Prince Albert Strasse.
And then they let him go again.
I wonder if they suspect for one moment how painful it was to get permission for this trip. The humiliating appeals to the party, the demeaning efforts to have strings pulled by our friends in the Foreign Office.
How did he seem at the lunch? Is he greatly changed?
A little older.
I still think of him as a boy.
He's nearly 40. A middle-aged professor, fast catching up with the rest of us.
You still want to invite him here?
Well, let's add up the arguments on either side in a reasonably scientific way. Firstly, Heisenberg is a friend.
Firstly, Heisenberg is a German.
A white Jew. That's what the Nazis called him. He taught so-called Jewish physics and refused to stop. He stuck with Einstein and relativity in spite of the most terrible attacks.
All the real Jews have lost their jobs. He's still teaching.
He's still teaching relativity.
Still a professor at Leipzig.
At Leipzig, yes. Not at Munich. They kept him out of the chair at Munich.
He could have been at Columbia.
Or Chicago. He had offers from both.
He wouldn't leave Germany.
Well, he wants to be there to rebuild German science when Hitler's gone. He told Gutschmidt.
And if he's being watched, it will all be reported upon. Who he sees, what he says to them, what they say to him.
I carry my surveillance around like an infectious disease. But then I happen to know that Bohr is also under surveillance.
And you know you're being watched yourself.
By the Gestapo?
Does he realize?
I've nothing to hide.
By our fellow Danes. It would be a terrible betrayal of all their trust in you if they thought you were collaborating.
Inviting an old friend to dinner is hardly collaborating.
It might appear to be collaborating.
Yes. He's put us in a difficult position.
I shall never forgive him.
He must have good reason. He must have very good reason.
This is going to be a deeply awkward occasion.
You won't talk about politics?
No, we'll stick to physics. I assume it's physics he wants to talk to me about.
I think you must also assume that you and I aren't the only people who hear what's said in this house. If you want to speak privately, you better go out in the open air.
No, I shan't want to speak privately.
You could go for another of your walks together.
Shall I be able to suggest a walk?
I don't think we shall be going for any walks. Whatever he has to say, he can say where everyone can hear it.
Some new idea he wants to
Sample complete. Ready to continue?